giving you greetings in the name of the Lord Jesus. One of the memory verses was, "The Lord, give me the words to speak." So that's what I want this morning, that the Lord would give me the words that he wants me to share. Qualifications for a minister, and I'll simply be identifying as qualifications for leadership within the church as Christ has designed. It is his church. It's very significant. We remember that it is Christ's church, and he will build his church, and he will do it his way. And he's looking for men and women that will just simply say yes to his call upon their lives and for whatever place that he has called each of us to do. And somehow, if we can each happily perform the place that he has for us, that should be each one of our goals, to simply do it. And in ordinations, it can be a lot of it's a shame that jealousy and envy and pride of life has to come out in it sometimes. And ordinations can often be a struggle. The more divided a church is, the worse it is. And so what I'd like for us to do is be able to sense what the Lord wants for you each as a congregation, and to be able to hear his voice and obey that. I think about, even in the political realm, I thought about the time when Trump and Kamala Harris were running, and the one side said, "Well, if Trump gets it, this whole thing is going to collapse." And the other side said, "If Kamala Harris got it, the whole thing would collapse." And it looked like it was hopeless. It didn't matter which one got it, the whole thing was going to collapse. And I'm not talking politics. I'm just saying that's what happens when authority gets in. What kind of authority are we going to have? Is this whole thing going to collapse? And somehow, if we need to see the need for each other, and sometimes my extreme and your extreme, we can come together with a proper view of way it should be. Sad to say, there might be some, I won't look at the women, you're not in this, to look at the men, some who would want the position for the honor and the praise that being a leader gives them. And to deny that totally would be wrong, in the simple fact that he says, "Not a novice, lest he be lifted up in pride, fall into condemnation." So there's that part there. We want someone mature enough to be able to handle the position without being lifted up in pride, and he simply sees it as a place of responsibility, a servant to serve the people. If you're immature, you might all once get in your head that this is a place of position and be lifted up in pride, and what you need to know is the Lord will not bless that kind of thing. On the other hand, there are people who they're scared maybe they will get it. And that's a sad situation too, because they aren't spiritual enough to even want to minister and want to lead out in the whole situation. So in this message this morning, again, I think it's for all the men about leadership. Whether you're a leader in the church, and some of you might not be a leader in a home, but someday you might be a leader in a home, you better understand proper leadership. It's a very important, as men in our homes, that we can take this place properly. And if every man here in his home takes his role seriously and does his job, it makes it a whole lot easier for the one who is leading out in the church as a leader there. The role of a leader is important. New Testament teaches that we ordain bishops and deacons. We don't want to make this role higher than it should be, nor do we want to make it less than it should be. There are sometimes in churches that the role is pushed high, way up. People sometimes just let the leader do it. Moses, you go talk to God. We're scared of God. We don't even want to talk to God. And push it up and bestow gifts and everything on. He's our leader. He will do our job. And push the responsibility to him. And sometimes that's pushing it up where it shouldn't be. Sometimes leaders themselves will push that position up where I will take control like a dictator. I'm responsible. I will manage this myself. There is there's the other side where we reduce leadership down to it's nothing, and then everybody is out to get their leadership within a church. It causes a lot of conflict and a lot of confusion. I think there's a proper way of looking at leadership. A good leader needs to lead. He needs to say what he believes, where he's at, what his goals are, what his visions are. I remember when we first started at St. Thomas and I was ordained. I was so badly in reaction to high-handed authority that I didn't want anything to do with it, that I wasn't doing my job as a leader. And I saw that as an error. I have to at least say where I'm at, instruct where I'm apt to teach, someone who is a leader. Sometimes reactions are one of the worst things we can have. Sometimes we don't even know when we're reacting. Sometimes we know what we don't want, because that's what it was before, and I don't want that, but we don't know what we do want. And we can get off balance on that whole thing. So what I'm telling you is, leadership's important, but to me, a good leader has to give out what he believes, but he needs to be able to hear what every brother is saying in the church. He needs to be open to hear that and to be hear it. And then making a decision based on what he feels the body is saying. I don't know where I'm at on all this with where you operate. You're probably going to get my view of a leader and what I would want and what I'm looking for. Hopefully it's a New Testament design on this thing. I want my goal in church life, and we're not talking about church life, is that every brother would rise to the challenge of finding out what Christ wants for him personally and bringing all that together, and then a leader has to somehow put that together, catch the consensus of the body, and give it some clear direction on that. Leaders are allowed to make mistakes, okay? They will make mistakes. And you need to accept that. I do not understand exactly how all that works. If God chooses a leader, he's there. Somehow we have to give him respect as a leader. I think the leader's goal would be to live it out, teach it in a way that he can earn their respect in the brotherhood. But you must give him some to be able for him to do his job. The goal of my message is that you would hear the voice of Christ as to who should be leader here. You want what Christ wants for your brotherhood here. You want the leader that he wants. Okay? This is not a decision based on our feelings or emotion or carnal values. The world's design of leadership is different than Christ's design of leadership. Gentiles exercise authority upon you. The perception of leadership is different in the Christian church. You know, Saul, he was head and shoulders above everybody. A tall man makes a good leader, right? Saul was not a good leader. Okay, get off of some of that thinking. You want a macho man, a strong man? You want a man that knows Christ and understands that. Sometimes, maybe we look for the intellect. Maybe he's smart. There are some smart men that are dumb, okay? Can I say it that way? We want someone that's real. Brainy people, I was going to talk about that later. Somebody that knows the Greek, you know, and knows the definition of all these words. We want someone that's real with Christ. Maybe he's your fishing buddy or your hunting partner, and you like the man, so you're going to put him in for that reason. Don't do that. Maybe you're afraid that someone will crimp your freedoms. Ouch. Maybe it's someone that thinks like you do. Well, obviously you're thinking straight, so if he's thinking straight, we'll put him in, right? I don't know how to work through that one. Other than that, if the man that thinks like you is not the man that gets it, someone else gets it, you look at it as maybe God's bringing that into temper your own thinking and to bring you to a better place. We have to somehow look at that in that way, that we all need a good balance sometimes. Everybody has a gift and some input into this whole thing. Okay. All of us are on a trajectory. I was going to draw this on your whiteboard, but I don't have any whiteboard. So I'm going to just, you have to imagine this in your mind. And a trajectory is the direction of travel that you're going. And I was going to draw the line in a little bit of a jagged way, ups and downs. We all have our failures at times. And we all have our goose. But there is a consistent pattern of growth in this person's life. He has a clear vision, a clear goal, and he's going there. And I was going to put in there about David. David walked with the Lord, but he had a horrible dump there, right? He went way down. But you saw what was happening, and it went the Sunday school lesson. He was repentant. He was sorry for that sin, and he came back up and kept on going. And you see David's life. God said, he's a man after my own heart. That's the kind of person we're looking for, a man with a clear vision, a clear goal to follow after, to go after God. He has some dips. And it says that you have given, David, you have given the enemies an occasion to blaspheme God. Okay? They're going to do it because they're going to say, look at David. He was a man after God's heart. Look at him. Just look at him. So when you don't like somebody, you're going to pick at his faults, right? Careful of that. We're looking for a pattern in a man that is consistent. He's a humble man that repents of his sin. He's open about his failures. But we're seeing a man that is continually walking with the Lord. My second line was, I don't wear that, but somebody that's simply indifferent about spiritual values and he just goes along. Well, his line, his trajectory will go down eventually because he's indifferent about it. And then you have this other man that is a carnal Christian. He goes along and then he has some, his heart is really not after God and he has some reforms. He might look good. And he goes along, he drags down. This is the guy that on Sunday, he likes to talk a lot in Sunday school. And if anybody talks, that's okay. I'm sorry, I should stand behind here. I get the wandering off. If you can't hear me, I'm sorry. I'll stay right here. This is a man in Sunday in church. He gets all sober and all serious about life, but through the rest of the week, he's just not quite there. His life is not consistent. And he will have some reforms, but it's a continual downhill course. And eventually he is assimilated right out into the world. Do you know anybody that was like that? Of course we do. Why? Why is the one guy on a path upward and the other guy on a path? That's our argument that we won't ever be able to totally agree as to why. But listen, you want to see, have you seen any churches that have simply been assimilated into the world? If you pick a leader that is going down that road of a carnal person that can't get it straight, it's not the final thing, but he's not going to take a church in a right direction. You don't want someone like that. You want someone with a clear vision and a clear goal as to what he wants, as to what Christ wants. Okay, so 30 years from now, if you have young children, you can look at it and say, yeah, I didn't quite get it right. Most of the time, churches 30 years from now, I won't be around to see if it happened or didn't happen. We don't want to go that way. We don't want to wait 30 years to see what's going to happen. We need to be men with vision and men that will move the church in a good way. And again, every one of you, as fathers, one of the most practical, real-to-life qualifications for a leader, a minister, a bishop, hang on, is that his children are not accused of riot or unruly. This is a very painful one. I'm sorry. You know, I don't know most of you, and I don't want to bring pain on anyone. But what I see from that, a father that has a clear vision, a clear goal, understands proper authority, understands proper life's issues, and is able to communicate that to his children, that's the person you want, okay? I know all children have a choice in life. We as parents need to make it so very plain to them. This is the finest choice you can make to follow after Christ. And to me, this is what we want in a real way. The person that is an overseer, the person who has clear vision. He doesn't always get it right. I think that a leader should be a student of life. How then shall we live? He is a man that wants to know, how then shall we live? He needs to be a student of history, seeing past, present, and what happens, and cause and effect. Why do certain things happen the way they do? A student of church life. How should churches operate? There's lots of them there, and lots of them operate in different ways. These are questions that a leader ought to be wrestling with as to how it should work out. I stand here telling you I wrestle with that, but I'm standing here telling you I haven't figured it all out yet, but I know what I want and what I think will be a right way. And I think I'm on this upward path. I'm not on this downward path. Time will tell. I don't know. But I have to have a confidence and faith in what I read in the scriptures and how I see it worked out from history. And again, where are we headed? Where are we going? One of the things that I think about often in life, what counts and what doesn't count. Sometimes I think we major in minors and minor in majors. Of course, that's you, not me. I do the right things. So that's what we have to wrestle with, right? What counts in life? Have you seen anybody that got focused on the wrong thing? And he made a big deal out of something that wasn't important? We want to wrestle with that thing. And fathers and leaders, all of us have 24 hours in a day. We're all equal in that area. Some have more energy than others. I'll give you that. You know, in order to get you less energy. But what are you going to spend your time in life doing? What counts? What's important to you? What are your values? Your wife, your children, family, and church? Is that important to you? It better be. How many old people have you heard say, I wish I'd have spent more time with my family? I wish I would have not chased after that dollar bill so much. 1 Timothy, I forgot to look when I got up here, but anyway, let's try to get that. 1 Timothy, fight the good fight of faith. There are many things you can pursue in life, and Satan will throw many things at us. Sensual pleasures, desires, wealth, all that. He says, I should read it. He talks about in 1 Timothy 6 about they that will be rich, and they that the love of money, and many have been pierced through with many sorrows. Verse 11, but thou, O man of God, flee these things. And he's simply talking there about money and riches. Flee these things. Follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. We will not naturally go after proper things. The normal tendency. Do any of you like that green stuff? We all do. If we just be honest about it, we like that green stuff. And you're going to have to fight that fight to say, this is not number one. A man with a vision understands the futility of chasing money. Go talk to the rich men. How many of these extremely wealthy men can't even keep their first wife? What have they proved in life? What did Solomon say? Solomon was richer than any of them. I mean, his silver, they didn't even count then. There was so much silver. Don't you wish you had all his stones? They were like stones. He counted the gold. And he had all that. And he said there's nothing better for a man than to live joyfully with the wife of his youth. That's the richest thing you can have. How many pursuit for wealth has destroyed marriages? Men with vision can clearly see that it's not what counts in life. And when you get to my age, you realize it's not counting. I don't have this, you know, they tell you how much money you should have for retirement. I'm probably in trouble. I have 13 children. That's my retirement. So I added that. I don't know where that comes from. But anyhow, I had a neighbor, and he worked hard. He was a good farmer, and he said these nursing homes cost a lot of money, and he wanted to lay up a lot of money to pay for the nursing home. What kind of a vision is that? And his relationship with his boys were sour because they knew that he was always grasping for more money. And I think he died at 76. He didn't even have time to spend all his money. He had, and I will stop going on that, but the futility of chasing after that. Otto Koenig in the Pineapple series, he says, we have sowed up our wealth, or we've secured it so much, and God can't even touch us with our money anymore, that he has to start touching our health. And I just added that. The futility of that whole thing of chasing after riches. One who lives for pleasure. And about the only one you get in the qualification is someone who is not given to much wine. I hope it's not here, but he is controlled, he's temperate, he knows how to use things in life as it should be. And there was a lady that went to the doctors, and the doctor said, "You Anabaptists eat healthy and good food, you just eat too much of it." So we want a man that's temperate, a man that knows how to control his appetites, not just in food. And this does not mean, I mean, he should be sober, righteous, and godly. This does not mean that a leader does not have enjoyable pleasures, but it's not a man that is running from one party to the next party. He's always looking for a party. He's always looking for fun. He's always out for that kind of loose living. Someone who is a sports addict. Someone who is, I gotta be careful where I go with some of this. Hunting is okay, but hunting, one man said about the fellow that wanted to get his mountain goat, I don't know enough about it, and he spent like $40,000 on his trip. He said, "That's not a hobby. That's a, what do you say? That's an addiction." So we want someone that has proper values and proper goals. Okay, one of the things that I would like to see in someone I choose for a leader, and I already mentioned this, is someone who is eager to know. And this does not mean, again, if you lay it all out, church life, church history, I don't know if I know a little about church history. I'm not a church history student. I know my history, and sometimes my history is limited from 1950. Well, I didn't know anything in 55, but till today, and I know that church history. And I think sometimes you need to hear what some of the old men are saying about church history as they studied and they saw things that happened. But just a student of life, how do the scriptures in application, where does it fit in? And how does it, someone just wants to know, seeks out true knowledge and true wisdom. Paul, as he writes to Timothy, he says, you know, "I charge you therefore to preach the word." First Timothy talks about searching the scriptures. "Give yourself wholly to them that your profiting may appear unto all men." A man that is a student of the scriptures, and you don't just study the scriptures to know it, to memorize it. Yeah, you should memorize it. But to know, how does it apply to life? How does it teach me? What is it teaching me? And sometimes, you know, we might think we're not smart enough. Listen, if you can read, you don't even probably have to be smart enough to read, okay? Obedience is one of the key factors here. You can read the scriptures and obey it and put it into practice and know how that it works out. If somebody reads a book about how to fix an appliance, a dryer, I fix appliances, and he gives you a list of 10 things, you need to do this to fix your dryer. You know, that's okay. But how about somebody that knows what's happening with the dryer? You'd rather him... You want somebody that has lived it out and understands how it works out. You want practical preaching and practical teaching, and somebody that isn't just giving you, this is the verse, he wants to explain how it works. You can start preaching on the Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." And maybe you know the Greek of all these words. I'm not picking it to talk about the Greek. I don't know Greek. I look it up in my Strong's, and sometimes there it is. I can't pronounce the words, so I don't even try to pronounce the word. But you can be such a scholar and be able to tell everybody, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," and stand up here and act like, "You bunch of dummies, do you hear what I'm saying?" And you don't even understand poor in spirit at all. Poor in spirit, to me, as I, the more I study that and the more I understand that, it's probably the most powerful verse there is. And it's the first one of the Beatitudes. Do we know what it means to be poor in spirit? The poorer in spirit you are, the more powerful voice you will have, because you're not, I'm going off on target on what I'm saying. You're not a person who is proud, fear of people, fear of what they're saying. People who can teach, you want someone who can teach in a real way. Paul talks about men vain jangling. Somebody could teach from Blessed are the Poor in Spirit for a half hour. What did he say? Did you ever hear anybody like that? What did he really say? That's vain jangling. Trying to be teachers of the law and not understanding at all what they're saying. We want real men. We want someone who has lived it out in a real way. One of the qualifications is apt to teach. The ability to communicate his thoughts to other people. And I don't claim any virtue in that area, because it's hard. Sometimes you preach and nobody catches it, so I haven't been able to. A good teacher can lay it out in a plain way that people understand it, and that's a gift, and it's something you have to cultivate also. And fathers, how many fathers have struggled to communicate with their children? And you know what? I have heard, I'm getting off track again, but Satan delights in that kind of thing, and he makes it hard for fathers to communicate the real things to their children, because that's the key to the next generation, fathers that can communicate to their children, and leaders that can communicate the truth. It's powerful. It's what we need in a real way, to communicate it so we can get a hold of it. Several issues that can become a conflict in ordinations, a conflict in church. One I might think about is authority. Okay? I don't know how you are here, and I'm speaking from my past experience, from our experiences, authority. Are there any parents here that look at other parents and think they're too soft and too lenient? Don't answer. You know. Are there any parents here that think he's too harsh on his children? He's too nasty. Maybe that's not here. But I've seen it constantly. And again, there's a proper way of authority with children. But that's what I'm telling you. That has been. You don't want a leader that's too harsh, do you? Maybe that's what you need. You don't want a leader that's too soft either. You want a proper authority. What Paul said to the Corinthians, you better get this straight or I'm going to come with a rod. That sounds pretty hard, doesn't it, Dan? And then in Thessalonians, this is Paul's other side of him. He says, so being, where's it at? Nor of men sought we glory, neither of you nor of others, when we might have been burdensome as the apostles of Christ. But we were gentle among you, even as a nurse cherisheth her children. This is Paul. As a nurse takes care of his children, soft and gentle and easy. This is Paul saying this. And then in Timothy, one of my favorite verses about leadership, where he says, the servant of the Lord. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient. Proper authority, in my mind, is someone, and this is for fathers again, you need to be firm, but very gentle, very careful, and very kind in your firmness. Second Timothy 4, verse 2, where Paul again is writing to Timothy, and this, preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, and exhort. Now again, we'll get some Greek here. The reprove and rebuke is very close, but it's two different words in the Greek. And again, I'm not going to pronounce them because I don't even have them written down here to even know. But the word reprove simply means declare, say no. How hard is it to say no? Okay. Paul said in 1 Thessalonians there, we do not try to please men. Do you know any fathers that can't say no to their children? Do you know any husbands that can't say no to their wife? And this is not some kind of a domineering husband, father, that is just, everything is no, no. It's not that. Again, father knows what counts and what doesn't count. And he gives lots of leeway in many areas, but he has a clear vision of what he wants. And when it's wrong, he'll say, no, we will not do that. If I was to pick a leader, I would pick a man that would say, be able to say no. I've learned that if anything but a no, if you say that's not a good idea, I don't think that's the way you should do it, that's not appropriate, is not a no. It's a yes. It's interpreted as a yes. Say no. Okay? Just that simple. Do you know any fathers who wanted their children to like them? I'm getting away from the mic. I'm sorry if you can't hear me. Fathers that want their children to love them. Mothers that want their children to love them. And so you don't say no to them. Guess what? They're going to grow up and hate you for it. You'd better say no, but you need to say no as to what counts too. Don't just say no because it's for your own pleasure and for your own gain, but say no. That's very, very important. A leader wants his people to like him too, but he needs to sometimes say no. We can't do this. Reprove and rebuke. The second one is to rebuke is to say, not just to say no, but if we do this, this is what's going to happen. He has lined up cause and effect. He understands history. He understands the scriptures. He understands these things. This is going against God's perfect commandment, and we can't go there, or it'll be a disaster for us. It'll ruin us. Reprove, rebuke, and exhort. He's not just a no man, but he says, this is what we need to do. Exhort and show the proper way to go on this whole thing. Clear vision, a clear understanding, and he's able to teach his family. He's able to say, no, if you do this, this will happen. And what is profitable in your life, if you say, this is what will happen. And they began to see this is what's going to happen. You have gained their respect, and your authority is solid right there. Because Dad said, this is what's going to happen, and this is what did happen. And we need to give clear declaration as to where we need to go. The next one I'm going to look at is traditions. And maybe I'll get in trouble here, but that's all right. There's probably different traditions here. Some of you probably look at somebody and say he's too traditional. And some of the traditional people look at others and say he's too non-traditional on this whole thing. 2 Thessalonians 2:15, stand fast. Hold the traditions as I have delivered them unto you. Again, This is cause and effect. This is a difficult one because there's times when we don't have an absolute thus saith the Lord for this thing, and it can get to be a battle in churches. And what I'm telling you is just be very careful in choosing a leader. And if you choose a leader and he isn't the one that gets it and you're worried he's too non-traditional, hang on, don't get so excited. And I look around here and I don't know what I should say or what I shouldn't say. There are things that are traditions, and there are things that you should not be leaving a church over traditions. Okay? You can leave a church. I got off track there. I don't know how I got on that one. But there was a church arguing about the veil and the covering. I can free here. I see both here, so it's okay. And the one said, well, if it goes to they can't wear veils, they're leaving to wear a veil. Listen, that's an application. Careful of your understanding of application and biblical truth. And the other side said, well, if you go to, I forget which one I said first, but either side, we're leaving. So, in fact, the decision, somebody was going to leave anyway because they couldn't make a decision. I guess they could do both ways. That didn't work either. So we'll not go there. But listen, the difficulty sometimes is people cannot sort through what is a biblical truth and what is an application. There are people leaving churches because they can't do certain things, or maybe the leader says, I don't want that. Be careful of that understanding. Don't wreck havoc in the church because of some of these things. Again, cause and effect. Sometimes it gets shaky. I helped at Byers Tire with my son there at times. And one day we were traveling somewhere, and he was smelling pigs. And he said, I smell tires. No, sorry, you're not smelling. At Byers Tire, they had hogs at one time, and it would smell like hogs. And he thought he was smelling tires. I'm saying, sometimes cause and effect doesn't work. My one son was eating breakfast, and Vivian was cutting up onions. And he said, this cereal's making my eyes burn. Cause and effect, you know. How often have you seen that we're off track in our cause and effect? And we can get hung up on stuff. If you do this, this will happen. And we need to be scriptural based, and we can look at history. Sometimes that can be a hard one. But the ability of a father to communicate to his son and daughter, this is what I've seen in history. And this is a dangerous thing. I'll take you back to 1968 when we split. See, none of you are even old. Grant, you're old enough to remember 68. I think you are. Sorry if you're not. But we split from them. It was not long until they were dragging televisions into their house. And I guess my cause and effect, I have not seen good come out of that thing. And for you, I mean, supposing you get, I don't think it's here, I'm not accusing, supposing you get an uprising that says, we want television. I was going to tell one story about a man that I talked to, and he said, if we would give the congregation say on this thing, they would all be wearing long neckties. He didn't want long neckties in his church. But he said, never going to have an ordination. Well, I said, well, now what are you going to do? If 60, 70% of your congregation wants long neckties, they're going to pick a man that's pro long neckties. Okay? Well, he never thought of that, he said. So you get him in the leadership. Okay, I'm getting off my track on this thing. What I'm just saying is, you remember when children of Israel, they wanted a king. God said, they haven't rejected you, Samuel. They've rejected me. What I want you to get a hold of, you want what God wants. Don't try to pursue some fleshly gain in a leader. You want what God wants in this whole thing. What happens when the cause and effect? I don't know why I even got into this, but I slid into this one. I'll get down here soon. But the internet, how many churches have split over the internet? If I was to pick a leader, this is my opinion. I would want someone that cared about that issue, concerned about that issue, and willing to put in place some things about that issue. It will devastate us. What is the problem with sin? It will destroy us. What is the problem with human nature? We tend to go after the stuff that is essential, and we need some guidelines and direction on that whole thing. Let me just summarize what I have. Picking a leader, someone who demonstrates a good pattern in his life. And again, not a novice, because he's young. You haven't seen his pattern in his life. You want to see a good, consistent pattern in this person's life. Not a Sunday Christian, not a person who is just here. You want someone with substance to him. Not self-serving, not a selfish person, not a person who lives for his flesh and pleasure. I would pick a man that has proper values in life, a man that is concerned about his family, his home, his wife, his children. He values children. That's, to me, a proper value. I would pick a man who is eager to know. Not someone who's in, I'm sorry, I keep straying from this thing. So not someone who is indifferent about life, but he wants to know. And I'm not looking for someone that reads books all day long. That's not real. And someone, but I, when he meets people, he wants to know where they're at. He's interested in church life. He's a person that is interested in how things work out. He's a student of the Word. And I'm convinced that we have a real lack of being students of the Word of God. It's not the final conclusion. The final conclusion in my mind is a person who has the Spirit of Christ, and as he reads the Word, he wants to know how he should live and how it should work out in real life. He's a man, I look for a man that is capable of communicating his thoughts in a good way. Apt to teach. It's one of the qualifications of a leader. And with that one, he is able to convince the gainsayer. There are people in church life that just want to argue with you about things, and he is able in a striving, not striving, but able to communicate, this is where you're at. And sometimes, as an older person, there are things that we have seen in life. It's difficult sometimes to put into words exactly why, what we've seen and how it works out. I would want a man who properly understands authority. Takes his place in a proper way. He knows how to say no. He knows how to say, no, this is not a good thing. He's not mean, and he's not nasty with his authority. He doesn't use it as a club, and he doesn't use it for his own gain. I failed to finish on this point. I'm going to back up. This is real to me. And it might hit you wrong. I don't know where you're at on this thing. Why I have it not in reaction to the past. This has been my observation. And there have been people who have had bad situations in the Mennonite church. Okay? I use that bad word, the Mennonite church. what would you rather be? A Presbyterian? A Baptist? A Lutheran? Do you believe in non-resistance? And I would be the first one to tell you there's things in the Mennonite church that I've tweaked a little, I've changed, but I have come to value greatly my upbringing in a Mennonite church. And if any of you know anything about Stralsburg, I shouldn't even have said that, but back then, it came alive a whole lot more than it did back then. It was the driest, deadest church there ever was. But I can look back. I told you about 1968. I could have been at Chambersburg Mennonite Church. I'm using names. I guess this is recorded. Maybe I shouldn't even talk about this. But I am so thankful that I was at this dead, dry Mennonite church, Stralsburg. Okay? When I look back on my life, I have seen too much anti-Mennonite thinking. Don't go there. There are some things that need change. You better value your heritage. You better value some of the traditions that you have been taught. Be very careful about an anti-Mennonite attitude. And I'll just tell you plainly, if I know somebody has an anti-Mennonite thinking, I would not choose them for a leader, period. Now, I can go home after this and you won't. But no, I'm serious about it. I believe that with all my heart. I've seen too much of that. Okay? Not a reaction to your past. You want someone that knows not just what they don't want, but do you know what you do want? Okay. We need to pray that the Lord would give us what we need as a congregation. Lord, we want you to experience His blessing upon your congregation here, to be salt and light in your community, to preserve your generation. Men, you've got your time here. My time's getting to the end of that time. But be faithful in preserving your generation where you're at. You've got a responsibility. If you drop the ball, where will your children, your grandchildren in the future be? If you drop the ball in church life, where will it be? We want to provide a way for our children, our grandchildren. We want a church that is built on truth and will be a light in this dark world. Lord, bless you as you go forward in the choosing and the ordaining of a leader.